Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents My Body and Other Crumbling Empires, Lessons for Healing in a World That is Sick, by Lindsay Medford. Narrated by Emily Ellett. Foreword. I am fluent in multiple languages. In high school, I studied Spanish and did my best to make fun of our profesora while retaining enough vocabulary to keep my dream of studying abroad, which, by the way, never happened. In college, I switched to French, fueled by white saviorism and a vague dream to do community development work in West Africa. But these are not the languages I speak. In early 2009, without signing up for a course or traveling across an ocean, I was plunged into the Total Immersion Language Program of Chronic Illness. In a matter of days, I started learning syllables I had never heard before. Burning, throbbing, stinging, stabbing. I was 20 years old and a junior in college, and suddenly I could barely walk, hold a pen, open a book, or pray a prayer. The land of ease became a memory. The body I had implicitly used to make myself exceptional went on strike until I recognized her as more than a machine. That year, I started learning the language of my body. I started listening to the phonics of my physicality. I started paying attention to parts of myself that Christians had taught me to fear, silence, cover up, and control. Your body speaks in syllables of sensations. She, or he, or they, or Z, speaks through sighs, groans, tingles, and aches to tell you the truth about how safe you feel to show up in your life. Far too few of us have been given permission to learn the language of our limbs and longing. And, as Lindsay Medford so stunningly shows us in this book, the powers of empire prefer it that way. Today I noticed a stack of papers peeking out from the bottom of my bookshelves. They were notes from an American urban history course I took in the fall of 2009, just 6 months into my language school of liminality in my body. As I thumbed through the loose-leaf papers, I realized not only that my handwriting has become much worse in the last nearly 15 years, but that I was surveying the property lines society has set for power, privilege, and our physicality. I was locating myself within systems, society, and history in a way that would empower me to reposition both my body and others' bodies to no longer be commodified, crushed, and controlled. If we don't know our location, we cannot seek anyone's liberation. Many, many years ago, a poor young woman on the brink of her whole future was surprised by a divine messenger who invited her to bear in her body a love who would change the world. Mary consented to become the mother of light, even though her consent would position her further outside of her society and religion's places of power. Her fear became a song. The Mother of God sang of the reversal of power. She reveled in the restructuring of society. She made the feeding of the hungry the chorus of her consent. God entered the world through the womb of a woman who knew and rejoiced that the birth of love would become freedom for the oppressed. My friend Lindsay Medford has written us a song like Mary's. She has returned to the birthplace of love, the human body. In consenting to a story she would never have written for herself, she has repositioned her own relationship with her body, her God, and her world. I met Lindsay through a writing mentorship I led a few years ago, where I witnessed a woman who not only has potent words to share, but has the courage to live a life that matches them. I've watched Lindsay live with integrity. I've seen her honor her body as more than a machine. I've noticed her humility to listen to those society has long silenced. In an industry where many writers hustle hard to be heard, I've watched this woman create for the sake of a joy and liberation that are unified with joy and liberation for her own body and all marginalized bodies. The integrity I've seen Lindsay cultivate is the integrity she invites you into in this book. In the fierce landscape of loss and the crumbling empires of commodification and consumerism, Lindsay has become so fluent in the language of wholeness, she can translate our body's truths. She welcomes us home, not to a world where weakness stands knocking and orphaned at the door, but where our whole selves have room to stretch and rest. Learn her language and listen, for your body is speaking the words we all need to hear to be whole. KJ Ramsey, licensed professional counselor and author of This Too Shall Last, The Lord Is My Courage, and The Book of Common Courage. Introduction. There is a whisper we keep hearing. It is saying we must build in us what we want to see built in the world. Sonia Renee Taylor, The Body Is Not an Apology, The Power of Radical Self-Love. 60% of U.S. adults live with a chronic illness. Some of us take a pill and forget our illness altogether. Some of us are totally disabled. Some of us were on the couch today. Some of us should have been but couldn't afford it. Some of us have found amazing support from health professionals. Some of us navigate a confusing, unfair, and uncaring healthcare system. Some of us have little access to healthcare at all. But all of us live with a before and an after. A chronic disease is a constant companion. Even if our condition is well managed, some part of us knows that fragility and uncertainty have taken up permanent residence in our lives. We have all known what it is to be deeply grateful to a body, and to wish for a different body, and maybe to do both on the same day. We all experience not only our own lives, but also the rest of the world differently than we did before. We wonder how much to reveal to our coworkers, families, or friends. We take health and healthcare personally. We have a different relationship with words like need and dependency. We hear people declare confidently how to be healthy, and we wonder what people like them think of people like us. We are 60%, but too many of us feel alone. Having a chronic illness, like any suffering in this culture really, feels isolating and scary. Sick people end up feeling self-conscious. We're told we're unusual or failures. It seems like a downer or an embarrassment or a weakness we should never show. We wonder if we're complaining too much when we're honest about our lives. We fear being stigmatized and stereotyped. We might accidentally make others uncomfortable if we joke about bodies and doctors. But the truth is, we are 60%. More of us live with these realities than don't. At the age of 26, my childhood rare chronic autoimmune disease, Behçet's syndrome, suddenly overtook my life again. I remembered that I am one of the 60%. At first, I thought the biggest long-term effect on my life might be adding more doctor's appointments to my agenda. Then I kept not getting better. I've decided to spare you the suspense. Healing may be in the title of this book, but my illness is not gone. It's still chronic. I might even venture to say it's a part of who I am. I know how to manage pretty well, but that doesn't mean I'm healed. After 5 years of healing work, I'm okay with that. Because even though I don't have certainty about how to navigate within so many limitations, I am certain my body and my life are good. I believe we, the limited, matter, and we belong. I believe we, the fragile, can show a culture of bravado how to live with finitude. I believe we, the delicate, contribute something to the world just by being right here on our couches. Again, I believe we are canaries in the coal mine of a breaking earth, and our embodied existence, our boundaried lives, our networks of care offer prophetic presence to the world. Over and over, my body, with its disease, has drawn me together with others. My illness is usually invisible, but since I started sharing about it with others instead of hiding, I've discovered I'm surrounded by people who also live with invisible physical or mental illness. For every person who makes it clear they do not want to engage, there's someone else who finds comfort and connection in sharing their own hidden experiences. When we connect with each other, we can remind each other of the truth. We have all learned something about ourselves and the world from our bodies or our experiences. What we need matters, and who we are matters, and we deserve to be honored, cared for, and listened to, and to know we are never alone. I am no longer a person who can chart a direct path to a goal and will my way to meet it. I am a dropout from every competition I once tried to win, the race to the top of the career ladder, the unending, unwinnable beauty contest, and even the secret dream of being known as a really, really good person, the best person, maybe. I don't have the energy to win any of those games. Even when I thought I did, I didn't. I live week to week and day to day with such uncertainty about what my capacity will be that I don't have the luxury of making grand plans and strategizing my way to an ambitious deadline. My planner has great faith in me, but I can't follow its hand-lettered instructions to simply make it happen. This is not to say that I never again want to be successful, feel beautiful, or do good. It's just that the ways I was taught to define and achieve those things no longer make sense in the world as I know it. Ever since they stuck a planner in my hand on the first day of second grade, I'd learned to choose and chase external goals. All the skills of ordering my world so that my efforts would add up to the correct final sum, 92 or higher, to be exact. The thing is, I no longer order my own world. The thing is, I never did. Your body contains two entire immune systems. The first one is called the innate immune system, and it's your first line of defense. It's a network of cells that responds when you get a cut or encounter a familiar pathogen. These cells do things like clear away dead tissue and gobble foreign materials whole. The second line of defense, the adaptive immune system, is more complex and subtle, and allows all the learning your body does to recognize and fight various and even entirely novel pathogens. The most specialized of its cells, Tregs, are made in your bone marrow and travel through your thymus, a gland in your chest, to receive their marching orders. Then they reside in the lymph nodes in your neck, armpits, chest, belly, and groin, until called upon by the innate immune system, which sounds an alarm and calls them up against an enemy, or even against one of your own cells that's gone awry. Among these cells, some subtypes can only be produced when certain bacteria are present in the gut. The bacteria signal cells in the gut lining, which signal the thymus to signal the newly arrived cells to take on the Treg identity. In the midst of all this complex chemical signaling, sex hormones also play an important role. For example, pregnant women are advised not to eat sushi because their immune systems are suppressed by certain estrogens their bodies are producing. If you're already confused by everything I've said about the immune system, don't worry. Your doctor might be too. It's so enormously complex that science is still working to describe, let alone understand it all. What we call the immune system isn't much like the cardiovascular or digestive systems, with specific organs playing clear roles in the human body. Instead, it's an incredibly complex network of cells that, by their very nature, can travel throughout the body and must interact appropriately with any number of self and non-self objects and characters. It's often likened to an army, but it could just as easily be considered a vast and intricate dance conducted by the music of biochemistry. At one moment in the symphony, the dance might dabble with some gut bacteria, or in another dramatic climax, it could involve the elimination of a cancerous self cell long before it can cause any harm. Every day, the dance passes through and sweeps into itself the lymphatic, endocrine, reproductive, vascular, and digestive systems. The dance not only keeps us alive by keeping us from getting sick, in many ways, the dance is, at least in part, our life. To take a step back, though, what science has learned about the immune system mirrors a truth we all intuitively understand. It's a tricky balance to defend ourselves from getting hurt while also remaining open to what can help and nourish. Let down your defenses and you'll end up serving a tea party to an enemy. Over-police your boundaries and you'll expend valuable energy on hostilities toward friends. There are a number of flaws in the popular idea of boosting your immune system, but the main one is that bigger isn't always better. An overzealous immune system might interpret peanuts or grass pollen as deadly enemies. It's like the Hulk smashing up a building over a piece of burnt toast. You don't want a hulking immune system. You want a Tony Stark Iron Man-style immune system, capable of sorting through vast amounts of information to calibrate a precise response to your environment. And by and large, even if your body like mine gets it wrong a lot, a Tony Stark immune system is what you have. Your body can protect you from viruses, bacteria, parasites, and more, recover from entirely new pathogens, and heal itself while you go about your daily business. And it's the very complexity of the immune system, tied to its diffuse interrelatedness with your body's other systems, that makes it so effective. Still, every Iron Man suit has its limits, and even our miraculous bodies are evolved to survive in a different world from ours. Have you ever been in or heard about a college dormitory where everyone suddenly got sick at the worst possible time, finals season? That's because stress hormones signal our immune systems to dampen down, which is a good move if you need your energy to escape a literal attacker or find food. It's less strategic when you sleep, eat, and study in close proximity to hundreds of other people and really, really need to take an exam free from the influence of cough syrup. In this case, the complexity of the immune system, specifically the feedback loop between your body's stress response and its release of T cells and antibodies, works against you. Highly complex systems are wondrous to behold because their design allows them to do so many things, absorb so many shocks, sustain themselves in so many situations. But if the self-regulating, self-healing functions of any system are taken for granted, it may continue to work until suddenly it doesn't. The system may shut down, or its own mechanisms may even begin to backfire. Depleted resources, eroded emergency stops, or feedback loops gone awry can cause extreme unintended effects. When I took naproxen every day as a kid to prevent inflammation, it eroded the lining of my stomach. Then my doctors told me to take Prilosec to counteract the resulting ulcers. But decades later, my stomach still doesn't regulate its own acid levels well, thus causing potential problems through the entire digestive system, thanks to the Prilosec that was supposed to solve a problem caused by a drug that was supposed to solve a problem. We witness other systems gone haywire in similar fashion when we talk about the Earth's greenhouse effects, misinformation going viral online, or pandemic supply chain issues. The 21st century is exhilarating and overwhelming because the systems within which we live have become more complex than ever. Since the pandemic began, we're acutely aware that our lives balance at the intersections of forces well beyond our control. Natural ones like disease, human-made ones like the vast scientific infrastructure that produces vaccines, even cultural systems like ideas about science, freedom, and democracy. These systems' vastness and their intricacy embody so many of life's paradoxes. They're simple, but also complicated. Resilient, but also fragile. Subject to laws and patterns, but also unpredictable. Wondrous, but also terrifying. Much of what we talk about when we talk about social justice depends upon a working understanding of systems like these, and a willingness to recognize that context matters. Individual acts of service or charity could mitigate some of our world's problems, but justice means recognizing when the problems are being caused by our own collective choices about how to interact with and organize the world. Individuals who overcome obstacles can be inspiring, but justice means striving for a world where we don't put unnecessary obstacles in each other's way. Individual effort is laudable, but justice is when an imbalance of power or privilege doesn't cost anyone 10 times the effort to achieve something. Structural imbalances, ones we must work together on a society-wide level to address, are not only unjust, they're increasingly difficult to ignore. Many systems we've taken for granted are headed toward collapse. Many people who've long been oppressed are now in full-blown crisis. We know that each of us plays a tiny, tiny part of our own in all these systems, but they seem too big, too old, too powerful, too far removed, or too hard to understand to participate meaningfully in them. Sometimes, the more we learn, the smaller we feel. This is a fantastic place to be. After centuries of creating and interfering with these ever more complex systems, by rights, humanity should be humbled and awed. Instead, people in power act with hubris that would be laughable if it wasn't so destructive. Feeling helpless or giving away our power isn't good, but smallness also isn't inherently bad. Those of us with a little perspective on our place in this world might have more clarity than some who've grown too comfortable wielding the levers of power. When I first started trying to understand my chronic autoimmune illness, I had the same unending feeling of overwhelm. What is an immune system? At the question, anthropomorphic blobs resurrected from some childhood viewing of the Magic School Bus or Osmosis Jones helpfully presented themselves in my mind. Many of the layperson's explanations I read in books or articles offered similar non-answers in the form of metaphor. By the time I could pass the quiz about whether interleukins acted more like soldiers or assassins, I'd simply expended all my chronic illness spoons memorizing information that still had no reference point and no use to me. For a long time, I waited passively for someone smarter and surer to rescue me. But there was never going to be an easy answer. Instead, I needed both to cultivate even greater respect for the power of my immune system and to claim agency and take responsibility for my part in tending to it. My understanding of the immune system became a working understanding when I stopped trying to comprehend its every detail and instead began to appreciate its complex interrelatedness with the rest of my body. It's not actually a regimented, self-contained system like an army or a superpowered smart suit. It's a system like a global weather pattern, a school of fish, or even a church community, incredibly beautifully complex, interdependent with other systems, wise and even mysterious, and powerful enough that when things go wrong, they can go horribly, horribly wrong. As I came to know my immune system less as something I could ever hope to control and more as something I participate in, I began interacting with that system with more care, respect, and intention. I had to begin that long and ongoing process well before I felt ready, knew where all the resources would come from, or even had any clue that it would work. Meanwhile, I learned all I could about race and racism, economics and climate change, community, church, and social change, spent 2 years in the South Carolina Poor People's Campaign, and met other activists around my city and around the country. Under the mentorship of others committed to actively pursuing justice over the long haul, I found myself bringing the same habits of respect and intention to my interactions with social, economic, political, and environmental systems that I did to my own immune system. I could never control or even fully understand any of them, but I could fundamentally alter how I played my part in them and help shift them from places of destruction to places of healing. When it comes to my own body, I've experienced every inching step toward healing as pure gift. One of the most fundamental tasks in claiming agency and taking responsibility has been to ask for and accept help from all quarters, from the authors of books to my husband Nate, who's always so ready to help me rest, from my doctors to the many friends who've offered encouragement, advice, and support, from yoga teachers to disability Twitter. At every juncture, I owe my healing and my life to someone else. From my body to ancient writings to the voice of Holy Spirit, I owe it also to the wisdom from well beyond my own mind. I believe this is how we will all move forward, together, as Howard Thurman and Martin Luther King Jr. described in the phrase, beloved community, as Black queer feminists have continually expanded upon, as so many global indigenous traditions teach, and as Jesus in the Gospels and Holy Spirit in the Acts of the Apostles show us. The power of love is not a metaphorical or purely spiritual reality. Our interconnectedness is a force of nature all its own. When we're deeply reintegrated within relationships that were broken, with our bodies and ourselves, with God, with our neighbors, with the earth, we are repairing and restoring webs of life that are the most fundamental, precious, and powerful systems in this universe. We are building solid, just, and kind foundations upon which to organize, march, and strike. Deep wells from which to draw throughout the grueling work of change. Flexible, resilient networks for the unpredictable future. We are touching what it means to be human and alive. Sometimes small and often in pain, but also occasionally creative and kind, and always slowly remembering the outrageous truth that we belong, as Mary Oliver says, in the family of things. But why do we so easily forget that belonging? Disconnection runs through patterns of commodification and objectification that reach into every area of our life and society. For centuries, our collective life has been structured around colonization, a system that never ended but only morphed into toxic, extractive capitalism. Those systems and the cultures that endorse them constrain our ability to even imagine a good life or a good world beyond the metrics of production or consumption. We don't remember how to locate ourselves as more than isolated atoms bouncing from achievement to achievement. We wish for communities of deep trust, but we settle for relationships of niceness. We've lost our knowledge that the earth is not just a collection of raw materials, but a place of unending interrelationship. A wondrous, creative, and kind home. By the time I got sick, my theological education had taught me a lot about that history and about what was wrong with the world. But I didn't know a way forward. I wanted to be a part of the solution, but the problems were too big. Why was it so hard to find a place in the food system where land, animals, workers, and eaters were all honored and nourished? Why did it take so long to find a doctor who respected the wisdom of my body like I did? How did it seem normal to spend my early 20s running on adrenaline until stress used me up and left me on the side of the road like a spent firework? Voices from some childhood Sunday school.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?